Welcome to the Yoga Connection with Zorananda. The Yoga Connection is a deep dive into everything yoga. Follow along with Zorananda and his guests as they discuss yoga history, spirituality, different practices, and the many misconceptions that have followed along throughout the years of yogic tradition. Hello and welcome to the Yoga Connection. My name is Zorananda, and again, I just want to apologize for any delays on releasing episodes. I finally have gotten over being sick for like the fifth time this winter, and it's been pretty wild. I have, you know, looked up on forums and, you know, spoken to other people, and it seemed to be a common thing, specifically this winter, of people like going back and forth from a few different things. But it seems like I can safely say I finally have gotten over whatever, if it was RSV or COVID or the flu, whatever. At this point, I, you know, the obsession of knowing exactly what it is, and that's just something I really can care less about. And, you know, where my mind wants to go is to focus on the next phase of this podcast and like the next series, and especially getting through this one. I find that when I'm recording these and I'm doing the series, I get really excited about the first episodes, and then as I'm coming to the end of them, I really start looking forward to the next ones. And so I kind of found myself feeling that way or thinking that way, where I sat down last week, last Saturday, to write out this episode. And because I wasn't feeling too well, just like my spirit around it was pretty low. And it kind of sucks when I need to speak for an hour, right? And if I just don't have the energy for it, or my sinuses are super blocked and yada, yada, you know, it just is not a conducive, time for talking kind of like nonstop for an hour. So luckily I'm in a good place. I'm finally at that stage of my health where everything feels good. And we can dive right into this last volume. And I actually had a really good time writing this one. Cause I found that I was able to actually really expand on, specific topics. And the thing that I find that is my tendency is to kind of go on tangents or rants. And I kind of find, even with this one that we'll get into, that the whole episode isn't going to be just about Udana Vayu. And what I'm exploring in this one is more so the Garanda Samhita. Because especially after the last episode, the Vijnana Vayu, and going into the Garanda Samhita, going into the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, and the Tudu Mandiram, I really liked and really enjoyed what I was reading within the Garanda Samhita. It was like refreshing to talk about and to write about certain breathing techniques and certain concepts. So for you as a listener, I think you're in for a treat. And the thing that I just wanted, like, in advance apologize for is, like, you know, some of the terms that I'll be talking about and some of the concepts and the ideas, it can be I want to say like heavy, but not, but in like kind of like in an intellectual way. And also, I'm using words from another language, right? So I want to do my best to make sense of all this stuff. And so that you as a listener and someone that's wanting to get into yoga, you can get a sense of, you know, how far this goes, right? Because when we're exposed to what yoga is, all we really are introduced to is what goes on in yoga studios, YouTube videos, Instagram reels and posts, right? And the world of yoga goes back thousands of years, and some of the top yogis and scholars have investigated these practices to such a depth that you see that really clearly within books like the Garanda Samhita or the Hatha Yoga Pradipika. And what these books can serve is a glimpse into a way you can, a way that your body can function that we're just not taught about, right? Especially in like elementary school or just like in our standard education or parents or whatever. So I think this is going to be a fun one, and we'll just dive right into it. So like I said, in this episode, I'll be diving into the Garanda Samhita, much more to speak on the specific pranayama practices that can bring awareness to the nature of the vayus and what effects or benefits that can come out of doing the practices for a dedicated amount of time. So that's really the important thing, is we're taking these practices and we're doing them regularly because we're experimenting with them and we're wanting to kind of prove the outcome, to prove the result that these books talk about, right? So though this episode focuses on Udana Vayu, I'd like to use the time to wrap up the series in a way. And so I'll speak on the sub pranas a little bit more, as well as to get a better sense of how the vayus manifest through the body's functions. Because today's vayu has been long awaited, of course, we'll get right into it. So according to Tamil Cube, Udan Vayu can be translated as breath that moves upward from the throat, the prana which brings up or carries down what has been drunk or eaten, one of the vital airs, having its seat in the neck, controlling the intake of food and air. So this one obviously is very specific, right? Where we were looking at the like past three or the past four. I wanted to tie into them into the energetics and energetic systems into the nervous systems. But I found out of all of them, this one seemingly, so I want to use that word mindfully, seemingly more physical, but we'll see how that changes, right? So each vayu can be linked to some kind of pranayama. And this is going to be the bulk of this episode. We're going to be really looking into the pranayamas that lead into the pranavayus and lead into udan. So such is the case for udan, right? So a very in-depth pranayama from the Garanda Samhita is called Sahita Pranayama. The Garanda Samhita states, quote, Sahita Pranayama is of two types. Sorry, these words are a mouthful. They're just tongue twisters. Sagarbha and Nirgarbha. In Sagarbha Pranayama, Bija Mantra, which is a single syllable sound. So Bija just means seed. And a Bija Mantra is used where in Nirgarbha Pranayama is practiced without a Bija Mantra. In Sagarbha Pranayama, the mantra Om is used in three separate sections. The first section, ah, so that's the bija, right? Ah is used as a bija, a sound that you produce in your mind. So this is all done internally. So you inhale through the left nostril, focusing on the red Brahma. So Brahma is part of a trinity of deities. but one is substituted for the other. So Brahma's the deity of creation, Vishnu, the maintainer, and Shiva, the destroyer. So in this case, Vishnu is exchanged with Krishna. So again, you inhale through your left nostril, plugging your right nostril with your right thumb, focusing on the red Brahma, specifically red, that has to do with the Rajas Guna. So the gunas are like the three fundamental principles and qualities of the universe. And so Rajas just means like active and fiery and a lot of movement. So inhaling through the left nostril, focusing on the red Brahman, the Rajas quality, and internally you chant ah 16 times. Yeah, sorry, I'm just reading what I wrote, and sometimes I write really quickly, and so I've got to like not read things that I've written because it doesn't make sense. But so again, as you're inhaling through your left nostril, you're chanting ah 16 times internally, focusing on a red Brahma. So in your mind, you're filling your mind with this red color and with Brahma, the governor of creation. And so you inhale to the point that you can't after the 16 times chanting ah. So it would be like if you were to sound it out in your mind, or if you were to sound it out loud from what is happening in your mind, it's just simply ah, 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 16 times. So then you hold your breath, engage Uddiyana Bandha. So Uddiyana Bandha is a stomach lock. So typically this is done on the exhale, where you exhale everything out and you create a vacuum where you suck your belly in and you lift it up. You might have done it when you were a kid. I know I used to do this when I was a kid. You just kind of play around and you're just like pulling your stomach in. So in this case, though, you're inhaling and you're getting to a full breath of inhale, and then you're engaging Uddiyana Bandha. So you are pulling your belly in and up, even though your lungs are filled. And so at this point now, it's the second stage. So the first stage was the inhale, red Brahma, chanting ah 16 times. Then you get to the second stage where you're holding your breath, you're engaging Uddiyana Bandha, and Bandha just means lock, right? Then you focus on the Krishna, but the black Krishna, and this is the Sattva Guna. And Sattva means light, and so it's the light, it's the pure quality of the universe and of ourself. And instead of a white Krishna, it's a black Krishna, because the black quality is to represent the like nothingness and void, and that in that comes this quality of lightness and purity. And you chant ooh, so as if you're going to go aum, ooh, 64 times. So then in the third round, you exhale, focus on the light blue Shiva for the tamas quality. And the tamas is like the earthy quality and the heaviness and like kind of like bringing down. So it's tied to this exhale of releasing things out, and your body going from a state of like inhaling and lifting up to exhaling, coming down. And then you internally chant like M, but 32 times. And then you do this again through the right nostril. So all of that is done through the left nostril. Inhaling, focusing on the red Brahma, chanting Ah, hold the breath, engage Uddiyana Bandha, black Krishna, sattva light quality, chant Ooh 64 times, exhale through the left, light blue Shiva, tamas quality, chanting 32 times, and then you switch to the right. So this one would be intense to do, right? Because of the length of breath and also the length of what is called kumbhaka. So kumbhaka means basically like holding the breaths, and there's two kumbhakas, which I think I'll get into a little bit later. But essentially there's the kumbhaka of just like holding the breath in, and then the kumbhaka of holding the breath out. And so in this case, right, you're inhaling and chanting the Ah for 16 times, and you know, that could take 30 seconds depending on, you know, how fast you're going, but you kind of want to go at a second per second pace. So it wouldn't be 30 seconds, it'd be like, you know, 16 to 20 seconds, but then holding the breath for the 64 times, that's for over a minute. And then the exhale, I think this is where it'll be the most challenging, because you want to control the exhale. You don't want to just like immediately let out all your air. You have to chant the 32 times. And so why do all this, right? Like, what's the point of doing all that? Well, we are preparing our nervous system, we're preparing our bodies, and we're getting in touch with this Udan Vayu, which is in the throat. And so where we're inhaling and filling our lungs and bringing pranic energy into our throat, and we're holding it and we're releasing it, we're inhaling and holding it and releasing it, and we're doing this multiple times. So it's not just you do it on the left side and the right side and you're done. You do it over an extended period of time, so you're building up a capacity for something. And the Garanda Samhita goes on to explain the importance of meditating on Brahma, Krishna, and Shiva during each section. So while inhaling and counting, there is a general awareness that Brahma is present, likewise with Krishna and Shiva. And you can find the Garanda Samhita online. You can just Google it. I found a PDF of it. And through the link in the description of this episode. Oh, yeah. So you can find the Garanda Samhita online through the link in the description of this episode. And I found this section about the Samhita techniques from pages 426 to 436. So by all means, check it out. Read through it. And you'll see for yourself just like how intense this stuff is. And these are things that yogis in India are doing regularly. Like, this is their life, you know. They live out in the jungle, they live out in the wilderness, in caves, and they're reading these texts and they have these practices, and they're doing this stuff hours and hours a day, right? And they're, so when it comes to people like us who are in the modern world, when would we have the time to really do this? Because this isn't being taught in any studio. Like, you can't go to your local studio and be like, oh, are you teaching Samhita Pranayama? More often than not, if you went to a teacher and asked them, they'll have no idea what you're talking about. And so a lot of this information in the past was like really highly regarded as secretive things. But as you can tell, it's in books, it's been written, it's, you know, it's available free on the internet. So we're in a time now where this information is available, and it's to our benefit to go through it. It's to our benefit to actually adopt doing these techniques and introducing it into our life and experimenting with it and playing with it and seeing what it does, you know? And, you know, I was talking to my music producer, John, and he was also like really big into pranayama and spirituality and all these things. And, you know, he grew up in a cult, in a yoga cult, and, you know, and we were talking about all this, and he was, telling me that, he found this like other kind of series of breathing techniques that weren't necessarily yogic per se. They didn't come from any of these yoga books. It was just some guy that he found online who has a website, and, the breathing techniques that this guy's developed was more so for when you do vigorous, physical fitness, and where if you're doing, I wouldn't say a lot of cardio, but you're doing exercises where you get out of breath, right? And like your heart rate increases and your breath rate increases, that he has these, series of breathing techniques to essentially view your breathing rate as like different gears. So it's like you first start your workout, you're in gear one, you know, you can pretty much just breathe through your nose the whole time. But then as you go on through your workouts, your heart rate goes up, your breath rate goes out, suddenly you're starting to breathe through your mouth. And where it gets to such a point where you're like almost hyperventilating because your body and your lungs and your heart are being pushed so hard, that he has these ways of gearing down. So if you were to be in like gear one at the beginning of the workout, by halfway through the workout or more, you're suddenly in gear four and you're like panting and you're kind of like struggling for breath, that there's things to do to gear you back down. And so that while you do the hard workout, you go up to gear four and then you come back down to like gear three, gear two. And his conclusion, so John's conclusion, was like, well, I was doing all these like pranayama and I was doing all this stuff, but like, what did it do for me? You know, and I think that question is really typical. And what I explained to him is like, well, the difference is intention and what you're experimenting with and what you're wanting to discover. So if you're doing these breath work, if you're doing these breathing techniques, without the direction towards divinity and without the unveiling of something greater than yourself, the breathing techniques are going to function on a very basic level, and you'll have some like good quality outcomes and you'll have some good benefits. But when you read through the Gauranga Samhita or like any old yoga texts, they highly emphasize that the purpose to all these things is for samadhi, is for enlightenment. It's to prepare you for an experience that you will have never had just in your normal day-to-day life. And so it's important to keep that in mind, that there is a goal, but it's not superficial. It's not just, oh, because, you know, I want to be able to hold my breath for a long time. I want to be able to like have better lung capacity. I want to be able to increase stamina. Like that's great. Like those things are going to happen naturally, but the purpose to it is opening up your nervous system as a channel to come in contact with greater divinity and your higher self, essentially. So now Nirgaba leans away from the over spiritual aspirations and towards the development of stamina and endurance. So out of the two, this is the one that's it's just to focus on the practicality of it and and basically like the physicality of it. So similar to Sargaba section, there are three levels of difficulty in Nirgaba, and they are Uttama, which is your advanced level, Madhyama, which is your medium level, and Adama, which is your beginner level. And the pair of breathing and counting are the sole focus. So just like in the first one, right, you had like the inhale, but then you're counting the chanting 16 times, right? 16, 64, 32. So you have that same thing, but in this one, in Nirgaba, you're only doing the breathing and the counting. So the difference here is that the durations of inhaling, holding, and exhaling demand so much more self-control. Because at any point, simply most likely out of weakness, the inhale can be sharper, holding the breath shortened by and interrupted by the sharp exhale. So having the levels help climb a ladder to overcome sudden knee-jerk reactions. And the breath moves smoothly. The hold is firm yet comfortable. So I'll say that again. Throughout the whole thing, the breath moves smoothly through the body. The hold at the inhale, the top of the inhale, the hold, is firm yet comfortable. So you're not straining to hold your breath. And as a side note, holding the inhale is called Antara Kumbhaka. So just like I said earlier that I'd come back to it, so it's Antara Kumbhaka. In Uttama, so the most difficult one, the basic count is 20. In Madhyama, it's 16, and Adama, it's 12. And the basic count simply means that for Uttama, the ratio between inhale, hold, and exhale is 20, 80, 40. Madhyama is 16, 64, 32, and Adama is 12, 48, 24. So just think of that for a second. Inhaling for 20 seconds, holding your breath for 80 seconds, exhaling for 40 seconds. And again, the most difficult part is going to be the exhale. Because your body is going to signal to you that it needs the next inhale, right? Because what you're playing with is the ratio between oxygen and carbon dioxide. And we have this safety mechanism in our brain that if there's any indicator of the ratio between carbon dioxide and oxygen to shift where there's more carbon dioxide, your body immediately is given the signal to inhale and to breathe. And so we're wanting to override that in this system where, again, gently, smoothly inhaling, holding the breath firmly, but comfortably. And then exhale smoothly, 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 smoothly. And so the Gyananda Samhita describes what kind of effects to anticipate for doing the Nirgaba pranayama specifically. And I'm just going to pull up, what page is that? 434. So right here. So quote, different symptoms are observed, which indicate that a particular stage has been perfected. If the body starts to sweat during Adama Nirgaba pranayama, this indicates that the ratio 12, 48, 24 has been perfected and awakening of the pranas is commencing. And so I think what it means, what they're meaning here is that when you have the pranavayus and the autonomic nervous system, is that you're awakening the movement of the energies within the nervous system. And so you're kind of taking it out of and away from just being solely autonomic to something that's more conscious. And so then you don't have to think about, well, if I'm doing this ratio, then I'm going to make my body just start to sweat. It just is a natural thing. And this is what they're observing, right? It's that when they're doing and they're experimenting with these breathing techniques, when they did this ratio particularly, they noticed that the body starts to sweat. And so in their observation, they indicate that the ratio has been perfected and awakening of the pranas is commencing. And so the symptom of perfecting Madhyama Nirgaba is the sensation of vibrations in the spinal cord. Vibrations in the spine take place for two reasons. Firstly, when the pranas are awakened in the chakras, and secondly, when Kundalini awakened starts ascending into upper chakras. And so this is where there's a transition that's being made, where doing Nirgaba Pranayama, you're shifting the awareness and you're shifting the emphasis of the prana movement or the movement of the pranavayus from physical to something that's, I want to say, non-physical. And that's like, seems abstract, right? But the only way it can make sense is by doing this stuff. And so lastly, the Garuda Samhita says, with perfection of the count 16, 64, 32, the state of prana. Oh, sorry, this is in the last part. So with perfection of the count 16, 64, 32, which is the Madhyama, the state of prana uttan, pranic awakening has come, after which the body is ready for the awakening of the Kundalini. So you have the sweating, then you have the vibration with the spine, and so then lastly, a person who inhales up to a count of 20, holds the count of 40, must be able to exercise self-control over the breath, internal retention up to a count of 80, and exhales to account physical and internal uneasiness, mental anxiety, and the state of the brain. This is some of my hangups with these things is like, I think it's just a translation issue, and it doesn't really sound right, so I'm going to read that again. So a person who inhales up to a count of 20 holds, see, and they write the, like the of 40, must be able to exercise self-control over the breath, internal retention up to a count of 80, and exhales to a count physical intent and internal uneasiness, mental anxiety, and the state of the brain. On perfection of Uttama Pranayama, mastery over inhalation, retention, and exhalation in the ratio of 20, 80, 40, Bhumi Tyaga is achieved, meaning the pranas are expanded, and in that state, prana shakti awakens, making the body light so it becomes capable of leaving or rising above the earth. And so, that to me translates as when you're not doing any of this pranayama, maybe you never do it and you're only living your life based on the autonomic ratio of your breath that your body takes control of. So it inhales, it pauses, it exhales, it pauses, it inhales, it pauses, it exhales, it pauses, and it does it without your consideration. And so your perception of what you're doing and what you're seeing is going to be not fully, but it's still going to be, you know, influencing how you're seeing and experiencing the world. And so what they're saying right here is that when you change the ratio of breath, when you change the amount you inhale, the amount you hold and pause, the amount you exhale, that there are fundamental changes that are going to happen in the brain and in the body so that your perception of what it is to be alive, your perception of what it is to be a conscious being, shifts away from a dense physical thing to a very expanded light, ephemeral thing, and ethereal thing, where then you can leave or rise above the earth, as they say. And so, like I always say, like, take this stuff with a grain of salt. You know, there's no point on believing these things just because I'm saying it or it's written in a book. You just have to do it. And I think what people get hung up on is that they think that stuff should happen right away, that they should start doing these pranayamas and then it should happen as the book says. And then when it doesn't happen, they go, oh, see, it doesn't work. Right. But usually with these practices, the yogis and the sadhus and rishis of India and of the past, they take on 12 year sadhanas. So they give themselves 12 years to have the level of mastery that they're looking for. They're not doing this stuff for 2 months and then being like, oh, it doesn't work. Like, this is stupid. Like, no, they're giving themselves 12 years and they're doing it every day, hours a day. So chances are, if you're undergoing a practice in a sadhana like that, at some point earlier than just, you know, I don't think it's going to take the full 12 years, but at some point within, you know, the beginning of your sadhana, maybe within the first couple years, a few years, you're going to start having these experiences. And the reason why I know that, because I've had these experiences when I took on a very intense pranayama sadhana practice, and I wasn't doing these ones per se, but I was doing ones really similar to them, that I was having that experience of first, like, sweating, of then second movement and vibration within the spine, and then full-on outer-body experiences. And this is something that I was able to replicate. So it's not that I just did it once and I was like, ooh, I had this cool experience. Is that I got to a point where I was able to do my asana practice, do my pranayama practice, go into my meditation, and induce expansive outer body experiences. So now, I can only assume that you as a listener probably don't do this kind of pranayama, or really any at all, and that's totally acceptable. Knowing that a breathing technique like Sahita Pranayama not only exists, but has detailed descriptions of how to do the practice properly, is like watching professional poker on TV, just for an example, and buying strategy books from the players that you're watching. So you're sitting down, you're watching TV, you know, you're on TSN or ESPN or wherever, and there's this poker game playing, and there's these pros that have written books, and there's lots of them. There's like Phil Hellmuth, there's Daniel Negreanu, Phil Locke, there's two Phils. I was going to name another Phil. and a lot of them have like really good poker books, but just reading the books isn't going to ensure that you'll have some kind of success with understanding the material. You have to apply the information and knowledge to gain wisdom from the experiences you have. So if you wanted to become a pro poker player, only watching the pros play won't cut it. Likewise, only reading their books won't cut it. You have to take the next step, go to the poker games and start playing. And how you get to the result of winning games will be determined by how well you apply what you've learned. It's no different with these breathing techniques. If you want the results that are expressed in the Garuda Samhita of inducing sweating, vibrations in the spine, and leaving the body, the information in the book must be put to the test. The techniques must be done exactly as stated, though, especially for beginners. When you're a little more advanced, you can start doing you can start changing things, and that's what I did. There were two techniques that I learned that I kind of like mash together, which is Kapalabhati, which is the skull shining breath. That's the one that's like active exhale through the nose, passive inhale through the nose, and there's a pulse of the belly in and up. So when you exhale, you pulse the belly in, and the inhale is going to be passive. So it just sounds like this. And you're wanting to do a strong exhale through the nose, passive inhale. And after I do that, I then do Maha Mudra, which is all three locks. So Mula Bund, Uddiyana Bund, Jalandhar Bund. And I hold that. And so I've exhaled everything out and I'm holding it as long as I can. I inhale and then I do Sahaja Agni Sara Dauti. Big mouthful of words. But essentially what that is I'm inhaling, filling the lungs. And then you can do this thing where you hold your breath, but you use your diaphragm to press the air down into the bottom of the lungs. And it feels like there's almost like a ball, like a really hard ball, like the size of a softball that you feel in your stomach when you're pressing down. And then you get this incredible sensation. It's like this explosion that comes up from your spine into your brain. And on many occasions, there's like this really strong tingling sensation through the body, like that kind of like vibration in the spine, but then all over the body. And then there's this like purging from the crown of the head, as if there's like steam coming out. And so I learned those techniques individually, you know, Kapalabhati through Akhanda Yoga and Vishuji, and Mahabandh through Hatha Yoga Pradipika, and then Sahaja Agni Sara Dauti through Agama Yoga. And because I was practicing so much and exploring so much, that I put them together and experimented in that way. And I had some really interesting results from doing that. And so here's the fun part. All of Sahita Pranayama, so Sargaba and Nirgaba Pranayama, Sahita Pranayama, doing all of those like breathing and counting and focusing, leads to another pranayama, which actually deals with the pranavayus. And so Sahita Pranayama is considered a necessary preparation for Surya Bedi Pranayama. So from what we know of the pranavayus, it seems that it is a system to account for the autonomic movement and processes of the internal organs of the body. The sadhu, swamis, and rishis of the past experimented with breathing techniques to take control of the pranic flow of the vayus to encourage a new kind of experience. And where prana is taken from the autonomic system and directed from the base of the spine to the brain. Awareness of the pranavayus is important during Surya Bedi because of a specific action that takes place. And again, I'm going to find the quote, page 438. Sorry, just give me a second here. So again, yeah, so awareness of the vayus is important during Surya Bedi because of a specific action that takes place. So on page 438 says, quote, prana, apana, samana, vyana, udana, naga, korma, krikara, devadatta, and jnananjaya. So those other ones, the Naga, Korma, Krikata, those are the sub-pranas. They're the 10 pranavayus. Prana is in the heart. Apana is in the anus. Samana is in the navel. Udana is in the throat. And Vyana is in the whole entire body. These are the five main pranas. From Naga comes consciousness, from Kurma comes blinking, from Krikara comes thirst and hunger, from Devadatta comes yawning, and from Jnananjaya, which never leaves, comes the voice. At the time of practice, separating these pranavayus raise samanavayu, which comes from the root of the navel of the, with the help of the Surya Nadi, and then slowly exhale through the left nostril. Again, inhale through the right nostril, hold the breath as per the technique, and exhale through the left nostril. This process should be repeated time and again. This very process is called Surya Bedha. This pranayama, Surya Bedha, is the destroyer of old age and death. It awakens kundalini, and the fire inside the body is activated. And so I think it's safe to say that the significant intention for doing Sahita and Surya Bedha is to direct prana into the spine, move it upwards, stimulate the brain in a way the autonomic nervous system on its own can't do. And so, understanding that doing these pranayamas and introducing Surya Bedha and having the awareness of the pranavayus is really going to be the crux of what helps bring awareness to the subtlety of the energetic system, so that you can really feel the energy moving up the spine and into the brain, and to go past the autonomic nervous system. And so then you have a direct experience and awareness of the flow of prana within your body and within your system, within your consciousness. So on page 439, yeah, I read that part. Like, see, this is a, here it is right now. So what I have written is on page 439, the Garuda Samhita states that according to yoga philosophy, behind every physical activity, a Shakti or power serves as its medium. That Shakti is called Udapan, the exciting force or stimulation on the physical level, where it is called Prayoraka Udapan, motor stimulation, or Sanvedi Udapan, sensory stimulation. The sensation or the message in the form of Udipan travels from one place to another, and it has a reaction. There's a force working behind this action-reaction process. These forces, which are related to the body and conduct involuntary activities of the body, have been observed in the form of subpranas in yoga. So there it is, involuntary activities of the body. So this right here is explaining how the pranavayus relate to the autonomic nervous system, and that when just left alone, the pranavayus work and they're operating, and it's operating through the autonomic nervous system, but at a very basic level. And that doing the controlled, like counting in the breath, brings energy into the pranavayus to shift it away from autonomic. And so the technique itself, which I haven't really got into, the technique itself is straightforward. All breathing is done through the right nostril. So similar to Sahita Pranayama, there are three stages. And stage one is close the left nostril with the ring finger and inhale slowly and deeply through the right nostril, counting the breath so that it is measured. So similar to Nirgaba, where, you know, you can do the 20-80-40 or whatever, right? Or start with the 12-48-24. So again, close the left nostril with the ring finger and inhale slowly and deeply through the right nostril, counting the breath so that it is measured. Exhale slowly through the right nostril for the same count. This is one round. Do not strain to reach the counts recommended by Sage Gidanda if practicing for the first time. Find a comfortable count and equalize the inhalation and exhalation. Practice until a count of, for example, 12. 12 comes naturally. So 12 inhale, 12 exhale, 12 inhale, 12 exhale, and so on. After some weeks or months, try the next stage. So look at that. Weeks or months. I'm not talking about, oh, after a few days, you get. No, you're doing this every day for who knows how long, for months. And then move on to the next stage. So step two, close the left nostril with the ring finger and inhale slowly and deeply through the right nostril, counting the breath so that it is measured. At the end of the inhalation, close both nostrils, retain the breath for just a few seconds when practicing this pranayama, and perform Jalandhar and Mulabandha. So you inhale at the end of the inhalation. You're closing both nostrils to hold your breath, and then you're doing the root lock and the throat lock. Maintain for the first time, then release Mulabandha and then Jalandhar Bandha. Bring the head upright and exhale slowly through the right nostril only. This is one round. Build up to the ratio of 1-1-1. Once the basic technique is clear, do not strain. So like I said at the beginning, you need to follow the directions. Pretty much exactly what they're saying, right? So when you're doing this one, your head is straight, looking forward, your spine is straight, your posture is tall, inhaling through the right nostril, holding the breath, closing both nostrils, then you're tucking your chin to your chest to get the throat lock, and then you're squeezing into your pelvis to get the root lock. And so when you go to exhale, you're not just willy-nilly letting everything go at once. You're letting go. You're letting go of Mulabandha first, then releasing the throat lock, lifting your chin, bring your head upright, and then exhaling. So otherwise, this is where the strain is going to come in. You know, if you're holding your breath and suddenly your body is giving the signals that you need to breathe, you know, you're going to panic, and then you're going to cause strain. And so the whole purpose of this is to develop smoothness, develop calmness, develop a way of ease through all this stuff. And so stage three, once the ratio of 1-1-1 is comfortable, build the count. Do not strain. Slowly increase the length of retention over a matter of months. Once a comfortable count of 12-12-12 is achieved, the ratio may be increased 1-2-2 and later to 1-3-2 on attaining perfection. So what they mean by 1-2-2 is like a ratio of multiples. So it's like a multiple of 1, a multiple of 2, a multiple of 2, multiple of 1, a multiple of 3, a multiple of 2, right? So just like how they have like 12, 12, 12, that's like 12 seconds. So you're inhaling for 12 seconds, holding for 12 seconds, exhaling for 12 seconds. That's a 1-1-1 ratio. So if you were to do a 1-2-2 ratio, it'd be 12 seconds, inhale, hold for 24, exhale for 24. So if you were to do a 1-3-2, then you're doing inhale for 12, hold for 36, exhale for 24. So I know my concern with this one is that I think out of all of them, this one would be the most intense just because of the practices that I found that I'm picking out. But I did that on purpose because I want to show how incredibly detailed and how freaking intense these yogis are and must have been too, like even far into the past, right? And that's what's so fascinating to me. And, you know, after just talking for the last hour, and this is the wild thing. I'm just looking at the time now, and I'm an hour has gone by, and it doesn't even feel like it at all. And I still have, you know, like a page and a half, oh, more, like 2 pages. So I think this is going to be a little bit of a longer episode. But let's keep going. So what does all of this have to do with Udon Bayou? Let's look back to the definitions. So one of the vital airs, having its seat in the neck, controlling the intake of food and air. A particular technique is used in Sri Abedi, which is Jalandhar Bund, which means throat lock. There is a subtle link here between the physical world we regularly encounter and an ethereal non-physical world. As long as we are fixated on the consumption of food, we bend to the overwhelming pull of hunger. But it seems that the throat and the movement of udon isn't solely subject to the autonomic urge like hunger. Surya Bedi and Jalandhar Bund enable a function of the throat to direct focus away from food consumption to opening a gateway for energy to flow from the body up the spine and into the brain. Otherwise, the energy is taken and fed into the other vayus, enabling new directions to be supported for a physical experience to be justified. So, for example, the simulation of food, literally the food turning into the body that we are and the muscles that we have and everything. So when thinking about what direction I wanted to go with this episode, I looked through my old notes from the 300 hour Akunda training. I only made a short point form of notes, but for Udon Vayu, I wrote, Udon is accessed when all four other vayus are healthy. So my thought is that without a yogic practice, living a normal life at the whim of the autonomic system, any chance of prana moving up the spine and enabling a whole new perspective of existence has a very, very low chance of happening, which I think is completely normal. If we were having crazy kundalini awakenings without even attending to, it would be psychologically disastrous. Imagine you're just at work or you're at school or you're playing a sport with your friends, you're at a club, you're at a pub, you're playing darts, whatever it is. And then you just immediately and suddenly have this like very powerful kundalini awakening where all this energy at the base of the spine travels up your spine and just explodes in your brain. It would be it would be just way too jarring. So it makes sense that the body has a kind of fail-safe to prevent a sudden burst of energy to flood the brain like that. I do think that not having any awareness of pranic flow and how it moves throughout the body would be on the side of not having healthy vayus, which doesn't really sound too good to say, but it leads to a good question. What causes healthy vayus? At this point, the answer should be simple. It's the entire yoga practice package of movement, breathing, chanting, and meditating, but in a very specific way, as we've explored in today's episode. Of course, I'm not saying that you can't be a healthy person without yoga. That is ridiculous. What determines your quality of health is based on many factors that a yoga practice itself can't solely cover. But when considering the health, quote, health of the vayus and what constitutes how they're healthy can only be described through the yoga system. The yogis of the past were highly systematic and very precise. And so the utilization of the techniques were taken seriously, and it's largely because they were aware of what they were up against. The entropy of life and creeping death is a power that springs up silently and suddenly. At any moment, death can claim you and pull you back into the abyss of the unknown origin. In the last episode on Beyond Vayu, I spoke a bit about Dhyananjaya, which is explained by Durga Aland as, quote, Dhyananjaya permeates the whole body, never leaving it. Tiru Malar discusses the importance of keeping jnana and jaya in balance throughout the body to keep it functioning properly. He suggests that the way to protect and nourish this vital energy is through yoga practices. So the divine spark of life and the draw of creation stirs and inspires a response, though, not only out of fear, but courage. Rejoice that knowledge and wisdom can subdue death in its traps. The body is cleansed, open, strong, and capable. The mind is sharp, focused, and deeply observed as a great expanse. Spirit is stirred and awakened into awareness that the great abyss is to be illuminated. The Vayus seem to be the direct movement of spirit. When chained to the body and directed to autonomically serve the ego's desires to ensure a total physical experience, spirit can only relate to the ego and its preferences. However, when the Vayus are purposely stirred and moved, pressurized and expanded, our very spirit can finally get a glimpse of a subtle world as explained by the Garanda Samhita. And so in that episode of Beyond Vayu, I spoke a bit about, I just noticed I like copy and pasted. I was about to repeat the whole thing. Here's where I catch up. Jnana and Jaya, in a way, acts as a buffer between life and death. With a yoga practice, death can be held at bay to a system that has a powerful pranic flow. Without a yoga practice, death is unpredictable, and jnana and jaya can sway out of balance due to ignorance. And the thing that kind of trips me up about the pranavayus and their subpranas is precisely how they relate to each other. It's kind of ambiguous. And the Garanda Samhita states that the process of blinking the eyes, which is performed by Kurma Vayu, is related to Udan. But Udan controls the function of moving food down into the stomach and vomiting, but what does that have to do with blinking? As much as I want to say that yoga is amazing and everything I've been talking about makes sense, sometimes the shit just doesn't make sense at all. And I wonder if what we're dealing with is a translation issue from Sanskrit to English, or that there isn't sufficient information to explain how Udan Vayu and Kurma Vayu are related, because the Garanda Samhita just doesn't go into any more detail. I think it's mostly done on purpose, though, because from what I've learned over the years is that master yogis purposely leave certain things out so that the students can figure out for themselves how the practice can unveil truths to them. And that's been my experience with my teacher. You know, like, we'll be talking about something and he'll literally stop and be like, "Oh, no, that's too much. I cannot tell you." And there's times where I would ask him about certain concepts and certain things, and he'll look at me and he'll be like, "You're thinking too much." And that's it. Right. So, I was finding that too in the Garanda Samhita, where, you know, I'm like, I'm wanting to make this connection. I'm like, okay, like, you know, what is it about blinking the eyes? What is it about Udon? But then they just don't go into it. They just tell you about it. And so there's this like weird dichotomy between when it comes to certain ideas and certain concepts and explaining them thoroughly, they don't. But then when it comes to the techniques, they're like very thorough in explaining the techniques and what to do and what not to do. So it can be confusing really getting a grasp of, you know, like what to think and, you know, what to consider. But, for the most part, I think that, you know, another reason for that is because this is a lifelong journey. This isn't just something that you read once and then you're like, "Oh yeah, I got it." And then you don't have to consider anything again. The point of these practices is that you're doing them daily and you're doing them, you know, over a long period of time. And it's why they say, like, okay, if you're starting with Surya Bedi, you're doing this one ratio between the inhales holding and the exhale for months, right? So this point, don't really have much else to say about Udon Vayu and the Garanda Samedia. So I'm pretty impressed with myself. We hit the 1 hour mark. I think the Beyond Vayu episode was, I think, significantly shorter. I think I really only got to like, you know, 35 minutes or 40 minutes. But wow, this hour's just ripped by. So what I'll end with here is announcing the next series. And the next series that we'll be exploring is Ashtanga Yoga in its entirety. The series will have 16 episodes, so there is a lot to cover. Ashtanga Yoga simply translates to the eight-limbed path of yoga. It is not Batabi Joyce's Ashtanga Yoga series, which from what I know doesn't really have much to do with the original eight-limbed path. And in the series, we'll cover episode by episode the yamas, the niyamas, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. I'll say that again because I think I just said that a little bit too quick. So the eight limbs are yamas, and there's five of them. And these are the kind of like moral don'ts. It's like the things that you kind of want to avoid. And then niyamas, and there's five of them. And those are the things that you want to actually like strive for. Those are the do's. And then asana is, of course, your physical practice and movement. Pranayama is your breath work. Pratyahara is sense withdrawal. Dharana is like focus and concentration. Dhyana is like the closest word for that can relate to is like meditation, but it's also like absolution, like you're being absolved into what would lead into samadhi, which is enlightenment. I'm going to take a bit of a hiatus before I start Ashtanga Yoga. I'm going to be moving in May, so I want to take this next month to just focus on getting all my kind of my shit together. And I think the next time I'll be releasing an episode will be in May, and maybe after the first week of May. So I'm going to take, you know, bit over a month break. But yeah, that's it for today. I just want to thank everyone that's been listening and, some new listeners. I check, the stats of this podcast regularly, and I've been seeing, some sweet little spikes of viewers and listeners, and, do feel free to reach out to me if you have any questions. I know this information can be kind of overwhelming because there's a lot to it. So if you have any questions, you can go to my website. You can send me an email through my website at zorananda.com. So it's ZORANANDA.com. You can find me on Instagram as well, Yogi Zorananda. And feel free to message me there. I check my messages, and I know there's like the like hidden or the other message box. I'll have links to some things. It'll mainly just be the Garanda Samhita, and then I'll have links to like my social media and my music. And yeah, the best way to support me in this is just to check out my website, order a copy of my book. If you want a physical copy right now, I'm directing people to Amazon just because I don't have physical copies on me, and it's easier just to get it through Amazon. You'll be able to get it much quicker than if you get it through me, because then I have to like order a whole new batch, and I'm just not really at the point where it makes sense for me to bulk order, like, you know, 100, 200 books. And so I want to build up to that point where I know I have a demand and that there's, you know, listeners who would rather just buy it from me directly and not support something like Amazon. But, you know, in my life right now, in my situation, is I just have to make a compromise. And so, that's it. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being interested in this work, being interested in yoga and the philosophies and all the craziness of this world. And have a wonderful rest of your day. Enjoy.